Welcome to the Hall of Blue Illumination, the podcast dedicated to M.A.R. Barker's legendary world of Tecumel.
We are back in the Hall of Blue Illumination. With me, as usual, are James Malaszewski.
Hello.
And Victor Raymond.
Hi there.
Today's topic is underworlds in Tecumel. Now, most people who are listening to this podcast have probably created some kind of dungeon or whatnot on graph paper and presented it to their players. But the underworld of Tecumel is not the same as a dungeon in Dungeons & Dragons. Some of us have a lot of experience creating both dungeons and underworlds, and that would be one James Malaszewski. So James, if there is anything you would like to say about this topic, that would be
great. Well, there's probably lots of things I could say about this topic, but can we narrow it down a little bit? Let's see.
Sure. Yeah. What's the difference between a dungeon and an underworld?
That's a good question. Okay. That's a good way to start. Well, there doesn't have to be any difference, really. I don't think. I mean, I think a lot of people, when they start doing underworlds for Tecumel, they're very much like dungeons, and I don't think they're that different. I mean, in broad terms, but I mean, the main thing that I would say is that an underworld is sort of like a, I hate to use the term, you know, it's alive, it's a living place, it's active and all that, because dungeons can be that too. But Tecumel underworlds, at least as I imagine them, there's a lot more going on down there than is typically the case with a dungeon. Because you'll often have locations like, for example, you know, tomb complexes or older temples that are still maintained by people from the surface, or even people who spend pretty much all their time down there. So when you go into an underworld, it isn't just, you know, wandering about through empty rooms and, you know, killing monsters and looting treasures, but there's actually sort of a society down there. There are things happening in interactions that I think make for, you know, again, I don't want to say it makes them more interesting than dungeons, but it makes them different than dungeons. You know, they're very much there's a lot of role playing to be had, I guess, in an underworld. It's not all just you know, fighting and looting and things like that. That's probably not a very good answer. Well, I don't know. It is a topic that there's a lot to discuss. Can we think of
what the hell are all these weird noises? Okay, so all of the things that you just said about underworlds,
yes,
could also be true for dungeons.
Absolutely.
If they were cool dungeons, in my
yes,
opinion.
Definitely. And I think that's the thing. It's hard for me to pinpoint exactly what the difference is between them. Because when I think of dungeons, I'm not thinking of sort of the worst kind of dungeons, sort of these boring, you know, little 10 by 10 rooms with orcs guarding a chest in them and so forth. I mean, dungeons can and should be alive and interesting and changing and dynamic and all those other great adjectives that can certainly be applied to Tecumel underworld. But I think the big difference between them is that Tecumel underworlds are, I think, intended to be of that sort of type, you know, these sort of dynamic, changing environments filled with people, and in the broadest possible sense. I mean, not all the people are human beings, but there are things to do in an underworld beyond, you know, like there's interactions to be had there. And I think for me, that's one of the big things. Underworlds are sort of, they're part of the overall society of Tecumel. They're built into the setting in a much more organic way, I guess. They feel sort of like an extension of what's going on the surface. You can have that sort of thing below as well, especially, as they say, that there will often be these temples that are maintained underground still, and they're important. And so, you know, they're not just these abandoned, ruined things. Victor, perhaps you might save for myself.
Well, some of the thing, I mean, absolutely everything you've said so far, James, fits in my own estimation of the difference between a dungeon and an underworld. But there's a couple of things that I think are worth mentioning because they end up clarifying all of this. One of them is that, in addition to what you said, that there is this structure to underworld that is already there. And it's based on the history of Tekken, right? And so the concept of Ditlana, that every 500 years, cities are reborn anew. Everything's torn down. Well, not everything, but many things are torn down and replaced. The old streets are filled in, and the new city is built on top of or around or near the sites of the old city. And what this does is it creates the layers that are the structure of the underworld. So the further down you go, the further back in time you are, okay? At least insofar as what was originally there. And so you start with the Tsilyani levels, and then you work your way down to the Angsunyali levels, and then below that, the Petaljan levels. And then below that, you have the, you know, you might have the three states of the triangle. You might have the Liani, and below that, the latter times, and deep, deep down, you might find the stations and hallways of the ancients. And so that can be massively daunting because you're trying to create an underworld that has, I think I mentioned, 6 or 7 different layers, and each one of those has more than one. You know, you're suddenly looking at something that could be as massive as any mega dungeon you want to mention, and that's for every city in the empire. Okay, so I think you have to choose. I think what ends up happening is that trying to map an entire underworld is an impossible venture. That I think that the thing you need to do is to focus in on the sections of the underworld that are there to be explored and discovered by the player characters. And you have to have sort of a notion of what's going on in that society underground. But trying to map out, you know, any of them completely would be, it would be an amazing thing to do. It would also take you forever.
True.
So recently we discussed the difference between real Tekkamel and game Tekkamel. And this is also applicable with regard to designing underworlds and or dungeons, in that oftentimes a dungeon is specifically made to provide a specific type of game experience. It may be something that is intended to be run at a convention in 4 hours or less. It may be themed, but many dungeons are small-ish contained environments. Whereas an underworld in real Tekkamel, so-called, that would seem to have a lot of empty space without much going on.
Absolutely.
And that is something you don't find in a regular dungeon, especially if it's for publication.
Right. And in fact, I think actually the thing about it is that, yes, if you were to model a Tekkamelani underworld along the lines of real Tekkamel, what you would end up getting is an awful lot of not just empty space, but jumbled mazes of half-crumbling ruins, and that only the denizens that spend their time down there all the time are going to know where anything is, not just, you know, the good stuff, but where anything goes, right? So, yeah, so any underworld that's made for real tech, for game tech and all, is going to be something that is more of an approximation than anything else. And that's okay. I mean, truth be told, what Professor Berger would do with the Jakalan underworld would be to take all of the sections of it. What he originally drew was what we sometimes think of as the good bits version of the underworld. And he would simply provide more distance between things if he felt that that was necessary, you know, and that you would know when you got to someplace because you would begin to recognize what was there, you know, either by what you've been told or what you had previously experienced. And from a player perspective, everything looks dark, dank, mysterious, and deadly, regardless if it's real or game techno.
Mm-hmm. So with regard to designing one of these things, you mentioned just designing the things that are going to likely be used in the game. Seems like one could abstract traveling between here or there and then get to the interesting parts rather than having to do what would be more traditional and kind of mapping out each 10-foot segment in a painstaking manner. I think in James's game, James, didn't we go down a few levels and just kind of summarized a lot of that until we got to what needed to happen?
Yeah, the thing is, early on in my current EPT campaign, I actually did something that was more akin to a traditional sort of a dungeon early on. That was before you joined the campaign. And it's fun enough. I mean, it has its pleasures and virtues. But over time, it did get to be a bit tedious. And given the vastness of the Techamel underworlds in most cities of any size and age, I found it a bit unsatisfying because it would take a very long time to get to, you know, the parts that I was interested in. So yeah, what did eventually happen was when I imagined underworlds instead, I think of sort of like nodes, I guess, of you know, clusters of interesting sections that are filled with, you know, the various buildings and structures and layers and so forth that I want the players to explore and interact with. And in between them, there's travel. So for example, you know, when you wanted to go down to say the fifth level of the underworld beneath Socatus, I didn't make everyone sort of travel through all four levels. They were sort of, okay, well, you know, a pathway, you've been informed that you do this, you pass the things, you go down these stairs and boom, you're there. And then you get to the part that I hope that you would deal with. So yeah, that's how things evolved with me, simply because I found, as Victor said, I mean, it's a huge thing. I mean, if you have a city of any size and age, it's going to have so many different levels. I mean, even within, say, you know, Soliani history, you know, 2,200 years, 2,300 years, there's going to be, what, many levels. I don't know. I mean, I know most Ditlana do not actually occur with a 500-year regularity, but even if they did, you're still talking like four or five different distinct Soliani levels. That's a lot. Never mind all the Ings Vignali levels. And if you want to get down deep, it's like where the tubeway car station is, that could take you forever to do. So you have to sort of abstract things and make it a bit more impressionistic, I guess, at times. And I find that works fine. I don't think anyone's ever complained about that.
Could I read a section here out of The Man of Gold that relates to this very topic?
Absolutely,
yeah.
This is at a time when our heroes, Harsan and Aiel, are being taken through the depths of the underworld by the mage Rideka. All right? And so this is not much of a spoiler to mention that. But here's what it says. The old man led off at a rapid pace through the passages beneath the prison. Rows of cells, tunnels, deep chambers in which enigmatic engines of torment loomed upon pedestals, dark and dripping caverns full of movements and secret scuttlings, all were traversed without comment. At length they stood before a round grating constructed of many little metal bars. A soldier produced a long, lever-like key and five men thrust the gate open to reveal a dank, black-mouthed corridor beyond. Once again, Harsan entered the alien world of the labyrinth. Halls, porticos, arcades, rooms, twisting stairs, narrow and rubble-filled tunnels, mighty chambers embellished with the ornate inscriptions of the Benaltian kings of the First Imperium. Then starkly bare crypts, improvised ladders, an oval court set about with slender columns and decorated with squarish, formalized motifs in a style that Harsan did not recognize. The precise, geometrically perfect vaultings of the Angsmanali priest-kings of the Golden Age. Stone demons leaned down to watch them pass, nightmares from the legends of the darkness, eyes that might have been carven or filled with malevolent life, and mold-splotched, eroded bas-reliefs that kept them company as they marched. All at once, they emerged into an open gallery. So, and as you can see there in a literary sense, what Professor Barker did was he said, well, yeah, that's how this works, is that you go through areas that, and you hope you know your way, and then you get to where you are going. And what is left there is more than underworld enough for almost anyone.
Oh, yeah. And I think to sort of try to make some sense of my ramblings earlier, I think one of the things that's unique about Techmel Underworlds is that because there are places located for which there is regular traffic, people coming from the surface to go to, because, you know, there's an ancient temple of Amuhla or whatever that, you know, the priests have to go down to in order to maintain the shrines and so forth. It's known there are passages that are well traveled and people know how to get there, provided you know the right people to ask about how to do it. So it's not at all unreasonable that if you want to get to the, you know, quote unquote, good parts of the underworld, if you have the right sources of information, whether it be a person on the surface who knows it or a book or whatever that tells you about it, you can do that. And there are means to sort of, you know, okay, we'll go to this, the basement of this place, and that'll help take you to where you need to go and so forth. So it's because there's a lot of traffic going on between the surface and the underworlds in Techmel. There's plenty of justification in setting. In fact, now that I think about it, that's one of the other things that I do like and think is terrific about Techmel Underworlds is that they're really well integrated into the setting. They may be, even if you're playing them as a game version, you know, more representational of the way, you know, game Techmel presents them rather than some more realistic version. They make sense. You know why these underworlds are there. They have a purpose and a place within the overall culture that I think, you know, makes them fairly unique. You know, they're not just things that are mysteriously underground for no good reason. They're there for very good reasons. And that helps to make them, I think, much more interesting sort of place to explore and poke around in and have adventures in compared to some dungeons. Again, I don't want to tar all dungeons with one broad brush, but
I want to mention about six different ways that players could find their way towards a specific spot in the underworld. Okay, six. All right, and they're all pretty straightforward if you think about it. The most typical way that the player characters might know, you know, learned of something in the underworld is to essentially hire someone who comes from a clan that is known for having some business in the underworld. And that can be anyone from some of the professional mourners, reed tomb robbers, possibly, and people whose connections are acquisitive. And so someone like that might say, oh, yes, I know of a place in the underworld that fits exactly what you want. You know, I can take you there, right? And maybe that's safe and maybe that's not. The next one would be a member of the tomb police. You know, someone saying, okay, I'm going to tell you, here are places you shouldn't go. If we find you there, we're going to arrest you. So don't go there. A third would be a member of a clan. Who you know, someone who's responsible for the darker, or perhaps I should say, the deeper remnants of clan holdings. You know, just because Ditlana takes place doesn't mean that everything gets demolished. Clans might want to retain something down deep down. And that also goes for temples. That brings us to number four. You know, temples maintain hidden places in the underworld. And so, you know, you may have someone saying, well, you know, I want to guide you to our hidden shrine, or I want to guide you to their hidden shrine. You know, so you have some possibilities there. And scholars who have said, I have dug through the records and I now know where this thing is. And I can, if only I had people who I could guide there and who would protect me, right? And the sixth would then be perhaps a, you know, simply a bureaucrat, someone who says, yes, you know, the Imperium does maintain hidden places underground, and so therefore, you know, I need you to go there, or perhaps I need you to go there and find something because we can't get there anymore. Or you know, there's any number of ways to find your way underground, you know, or find someone to guide you underground. It's more a matter of setting up those connections in order to make that happen.
Well, there's a handful of awesome plot hooks for enterprising GMs who wish to create underworlds.
Yeah, James, I'm actually kind of curious if you've, I would assume all the ones I mentioned sound like things you may have done already in your campaign. There's certainly ones I used in mine.
Yeah, some of them have actually come up. Because I mean, one of the things that I often try to emphasize to people is that, you know, the administrations and government of a city or even of the Imperium itself often have records that go back a long way. And assuming you can find those records, they can often give you, you know, information about how to get to certain places. And then of course the temples themselves, because as I say, I mean, I think one of the more common interesting locations to encounter in the underworld is a shrine or even a whole temple that continues to operate beneath the surface, because you know, oftentimes these temples that are built are really important, and just because Ditlana comes doesn't mean they get abandoned, they get covered over and so forth, but you continue to go down there. And for that matter, many of the gods of change in particular, I mean, certainly Sarku and Hrutu, for example, they don't, it's probably some of the more important shrines will often be underground. So, you know, if you get in with those people or a member of those temples, you know, you can find out things about what's going on in the underworld. And that comes up fairly often in our campaign, actually. So
the whole planet's just honeycombed with these things.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Amazes me.
It does amaze me, and it's one of those things that it's so very tempting. At least I find myself tempted to want to plumb the depths of it and get down to, you know, the really deep levels, because, you know, Tekemel has at its lowest levels. I mean, the planet. We often think about Tekemel as having been terraformed, and it has, but that's like a huge and amazing process that was done. I mean, somewhere deep down in the center of the planet or in its crust and so forth, there are all sorts of still machines down there that are continuing to operate and helping to maintain this human habitable environment. So there's stuff down there, and undoubtedly like intelligent machines and maybe even whole societies that are underneath the surface. And I want to do things with them sometimes, but it's sort of, well, they're really far deep down, and I it's hard to justify that. But yeah, the planet, it's just riddled with lovely things to play around with if you are so inclined.
I mean, let me mention a few places that date back that far, you know, that are of the ancient times. There is the Planetary Governor's Palace, which it is reputed is somewhere in the northern hemisphere, far to the east from Soyan, okay, in mountains. And it is reachable by tubeway car and perhaps air car, and it is its own place, right? So that, what I just mentioned, is the tubeway car system. So underneath different places. And by the way, it isn't necessarily just cities. Tubeway car stations can be found in the middle of nowhere, because at one point,
oh, yeah,
today's nowhere was yesterday's somewhere.
and today's, yes, somewhere is tomorrow's nowhere.
Indeed, exactly. Indeed, that's very true.
And then you have there is a rest and recreation facility. It's sort of a massive facility near the South Pole that was originally set up for the garrison and various persons who inhabited the planet, you know, were part of Techamel before the time of darkness. And that is, again, reachable mostly only by tube-way car. So, yeah, the tube-way car stations themselves are part of the lattice work that knits all of this together. And sometimes they operate, and sometimes they don't. There is supposed to be a chance that you get into a tube-way car and, oh, unfortunate for you, the control mechanisms don't work, and you're turned into so much pulp, as it were. I really refrain from doing that, if only for the fact that, and maybe that's a stylistic convention, you know, because it's that sort of automatic TPK that people don't necessarily want to have happen. But, and yet at the same time, within the sense of real Techamel, yeah, none of this stuff works the way it originally did. In many places, it's broken down. So, those machines are there, but they are not functioning at optimum efficiency.
And the inimical races have access to the tube-way cars just as much as humans do.
Oh, well, yes. They get frequent flyer miles by using the tube-way cars as much.
The shunned ones certainly do, yeah. At least that's my impression.
The shunned ones do, the Sioux do, the Black Sioux in particular. The Black Sioux are smarter than the Gray Sioux. They will venture forth. They are more cautious, but they are more than happy to take advantage of the withdrawal of humanity and the other races of lords of human space. And they will happily take advantage of the situation of their own. Inimical, yeah.
Well, it seems like both in real Techamel and game Techamel, being deep in an underworld isn't somewhere you want to be if you intend to live very long.
Yeah.
So only the most foolhardy and desperate of people,
which is
namely
to say,
player characters.
Yeah, exactly.
Would do such a thing.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, the thing is, I really like the underworlds, and I would love to do more with them sometimes, but it's precisely because they're such dangerous places. It's people want to, as you say, they want to live. Player characters are foolish and foolhardy sometimes, but they do enjoy continuing to live, so they're a little more circumspect, but they're an interesting place to spend some sessions of almost any campaign, but I interrupted you, Victor. You're going to say something.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think the thing about it is that it's pretty clear from the early days of playing Empire of the Petal Throne that Professor Barker had put together something that was at times part dungeon and at other times very much underworld, right? So the Jaqualan underworld has, for example, the Temple of Umukla deep down in the underworld somewhere that is surrounded by a moat of flame. And maybe this is lava, maybe this is extraplanar energy, but it's deadly, right? And truth be told, that particular place is probably on its own little side dimensions, on a little faith orb, away from everything else. And it is connected to the underworld that way. Similarly, the Garden of Weeping Snows, where the wizard Nielmu resides, imprisoned by the gods for his temerity. That's deep down in the Jaqualan underworld. And so there's not just the physical stuff going on there. There's also the extra planar connections that are created sometimes by the temple, sometimes by something bigger, sometimes by acts in ancient history. And so, right. Yeah, an underworld can really go almost anywhere. I would say one of the things about this that happened after a while was that player characters in Professor Barker's campaign, if given the choice between going into an underworld, an unexplored underworld, or through a nexus point where they did not know where the nexus point went, would pretty consistently take the nexus point.
Really?
Yes, because it was safer.
Interesting.
Or more specifically, less dangerous, less likely to be dangerous. Even if it led someplace that could be, in its environment, hostile. You know, underworlds are full of things that are trying to kill you. Mother Nature is only trying to do that incidentally. So,
interesting.
Well, the lethality of game tech amount was pretty high. If you
indeed,
you know, take a look at the creatures, both overland, you know, wildernessy creatures and underworld creatures, a lot of them can poison you very easily or give you some kind of horrible disease or just simply kill you outright with very little effort.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, and that's actually something that's worth noting here, and that is if you look at the encounter tables in Empire of the Petal Stuff and you compare them with the encounter tables that are in original Dungeons & Dragons or even in Advanced D&D, you know, first edition, there is a much steeper power gradient going from the least dangerous to the most dangerous. That those charts create, I mean, it's not very long where you're going to find that if you use those charts as they are, that you're going to create some very powerful opposition to the player characters very quickly. And I think that that's partly an artifact of, if you look at them, they look very much like the ones in original D&D. I think partly because Professor Barker wanted to impress upon people that this world was bigger than the player characters were. And that was one way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And James, you and I have talked about this, the whole creation of what he referred to as Saturday night specials. Essentially special places in the underworld where, you know, you both put, you know, some stiff opposition, but at the same time you also put some interesting treasure, the sort of thing that if the player characters went out, they would get something that would be really cool.
Mm-hmm. Those Saturday night specials, as he called them, I always found that to be an interesting terminology. I wonder where he picked that up.
I think it is one of those interesting terms that, I mean, what he's doing is he's doing a bit of a sideways nod to the gun culture, right? A Saturday night special used to be, you know, a relatively inexpensive but dangerous handgun, right?
No, I know that terminology. Is that what he's referring to? Was that terminology current in the early 70s?
It certainly was, but whether or not, I mean, you know, it was also a kind of a nod to the games that, you know, when do you play a game? Well, you know, there's the Thursday night group, Monday or Tuesday night group. Well, a Saturday night special, you know, it's the sort of wordplay that Professor Barker loved. It was the kind of thing that he would do all the time. It's something that would suggest multiple references in a simple phrase. And
so he coined that phrase with regard to gaming.
I suppose he did.
Because it certainly permeated the culture outside EPT.
Has it? Because I've never heard it used otherwise.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I learned about all this stuff about the same time, so maybe I'm assuming that it has, and it's just because I encountered it early on. I don't know.
Yeah, because I'd never heard the terminology at all, and I was a little baffled by it at first. And in fact, I sort of assumed that it was a reference to the practice that used to be, you know, was still the case in the 70s, that, you know, they'd put on special movies on television show, you know, on network TV on Saturdays.
My take on this is that for Professor Barker, who loved this kind of thing, it was all of that. And this is retconning a little bit, but having known Phil, you know, that's what he would do. He would come up with a term that you could take multiple references away from, and they would all be...
Sure. Regardless, I think the more interesting thing is that it's the Saturday night specials, so called, that are the parts of the underworld that probably now interest me more than all the other sorts of things. As I say, when I think of underworlds now, I tend to think of those sort of little nodes or clusters of related things, you know, that are smaller perhaps than, you know, a true sprawling sort of underworld where you map out every single thing. But instead, you know, that cluster where you've got your secret underground temple of Thumis that's got, you know, extensive libraries and cool records from Angsvanyali times to have to go down to in order to consult, or, you know, a tomb of a, you know, of a great wizard from the past that has got all sorts of traps and guardians and treasures and so forth and so on. I mean, it's really those Saturday night special things that I find the most compelling when it comes to the underworlds, at least these days.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, and in fact, actually, I think those are the anchor points of what makes an underworld potentially interesting. I think, you know, if I had advice for any referee, it would be don't try to plot the stuff all at once. In fact, if anything, sort of give yourself brief descriptions and relative locations of things, but develop them only as the players themselves begin to explore.
Certainly save yourself a lot of time.
Yeah. And also, frankly, it preserves a kind of narrative freedom.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that that's an important aspect of this, is that you need to understand that the world building here, this is a big world. And trying to plot it all out could be an interesting exercise. But like so many things in Techmel, you might find yourself in over your head before you realize it.
Definitely. And I think that's the other thing, too. I mean, Techmel already has sort of a reputation of being very complex and deep in terms of its background. And I don't know that anything is especially well served by getting too hung up on making sure, you know, every square foot of the underworld beneath a city is plotted out. I mean, I think I'm not even sure that's possible, let alone necessary to do. And underworlds are changing too. That's the other thing, right?
Yeah, right.
There are things that are always going on down there. You know, the Temple of Sarku, for example, is probably always sending people down in order to release new undead in various areas in order to ensure that people don't go poking in the places they don't want them to, and so forth and so on. And who knows what other strange things are transpiring. And it's a dynamic, changing place, and I don't think you could really ever map it out. I mean, I'm not sure why you'd want to be honest, but, you know.
Can I continue with a section just a page later?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That is, in fact, exactly about this thing, right? At the end of this chamber, Harsan caught the glimmer of torchlight. "Are they Sioux, Master Verdeca?" the soldier named Jacek hissed. "Not likely so close to the surface. Moreover, those monsters prefer bluish light. They do not see well otherwise." The mind seer stepped forward and called out, "Oh, hey, who is there?" "Who indeed?" a high mocking voice rang back from the shadows ahead. "Servants of Lord Sarku, he who coils." A black-clad figure glided out behind one of the monolithic pillars. The mask of a priest of Kasarl gazed upon him with his blank-eyed, meaningless smile, all silver-stained with blood, scarlet, and flickering glow. "You go to your temple for the giving of praise?" "We do. We require only passage from you." "Take that." The figure stood aside, waving a graceful hand. Rebecca's party started forward, halberds held high, watching all around. The mind seer reached out and jerked the cloak cowls down all over his captives' faces. Harsan had only a momentary glimpse of many men, some in black, and some in the sable and purple of Lord Kasarl's feared cohort, Lord Kudanir, or spells. There were others as well, naked slaves with torches, and still more who were chained together in four picks and mallets. a heap of rubble told where they had been digging. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's an interesting passage to bring up, too, because, you know, it shows an interaction between people in the underworld that isn't antagonistic, right? It's just sort of like, well, we're going about our business, you go about yours, and we'll just, you know, pass under here because things are, it's a place where people do business, and some dwell there. I mean, they'll stay. I mean, I assume that probably some of the temples have guards and priests and so forth who are sent down for long stretches in the underworld to, you know, keep watch over ancient shrines and tombs and so forth, and they'll stay there for a while. It's like, you know, being in the military and serving aboard a submarine or something. You don't get to see the light of day for 6 months.
What an image.
Well, it just was a thought, you know. It's just, I often thought that it would be intriguing, you know, to, you know, run a campaign, or at least a short campaign, that involved people who were associated with a temple and were being sent underground for a long period of time to go deal with whatever it is that has to be dealt with down there. I don't know that you could maintain that for extended periods, but it would be interesting for a short term, you know.
You could certainly have it be more lethal and more realistic, so to speak, if you only intended to run it for, you know, four to six sessions. Absolutely. Or whatever.
Yeah. Because I think, you know, that's the kind of thing that probably does happen in the underworld. You know, I mean, there's bound to be people who, I mean, someone's got to man those temples and so forth, and, you know, continue to offer the appropriate rites to forgotten aspects of the gods that otherwise wouldn't be reverenced in the appropriate way. You can't abandon them just because Ditlana happened, you know, 2,000 years ago, and you're five levels beneath the surface or whatever. You still have to continue to offer appropriate sacrifices and reverence to, you know, these gods, I would think. So,
and in the fullness of eternity, 2,000 years is but an eye blink.
Indeed. Absolutely.
And the gods do not operate on our scale of understanding. Yeah, exactly. Of course. And I think for people who are running games, the thing to think about is, so what's there? And also, what could be there? And to not be too quick to determine what the answer to everything is. You know, this is how you get from point A to point B. Maybe there's more than one way to get there.
I always assume there's got to be more than one way to get anywhere in technology.
Yeah. Well, and that's something else, and I think this is something where game technology, not unlike D&D, you know, these 10-foot-wide passages that, you know, are relatively spacious and everything else. If you've been to an actual medieval castle, you know that, you know, spiral staircases are usually about one person can go at any given time. And hallways can be anywhere from, you know, 2 feet to, you know, 5 or 8 feet, or 10 feet. That's what I'm just coming up with all the room.
10 feet, so remarkably wide, yes.
Yeah. And so the thing about it is that, you know, this is where game techML, that tension between game and real techML, comes in really strongly. It's kind of like, well, you might want to think about how do you want to graph this out, because you might want to make it closer to real techML. But real techML is probably, it is bigger, more active, more apt to change, and harder to map than anything you'd ever want to do.
Time to get off the grid. Use regular paper instead of gridded paper, or at least not be beholden to the tyranny of the grid.
Yes, very much so. And that, I mean, Professor Barker's original scale for the first level of the Chacalan Underworld, it was graph paper that was 10 squares to the inch with the inches marked off as well. And then each one of those 1/10-inch squares was 10 feet. So it's huge.
That's crazy. So this is what he had, like some like engineering graph paper or something like this, like our arc or whatever, you know, because that's, it was 10 squares to the inch.
Yeah.
Wow. That's really fine. I don't know what the word is going to say, finely grained graph paper, but you know, I mean, that's like, I don't know how to, but that's a lot of squares.
And in his original key, which is something that, you know, we've got details of, it's actually interesting that it is very much patterned, as far as we know, on both his experiences playing with Dave Arneson and with Gary Gygax, because it's not, there's not that much description there. There's some details, you know, it's like, you know, this many monsters, this many hit points, this much treasure. There you go. But he did that, I think, very much because he was using those as essentially cues in order to give much more detail on the moment.
Right, and the thing is, I mean, I think Professor Barker, more so than almost any referee, would probably be very capable of doing that with regards to Tecmo. I mean, he had a very keen sense of what things looked like, and he probably only needed a little bit of a cue in order to just sort of spin off and create all sorts of descriptive, you know, interest, you know, things that would get people interested and focusing on all sorts of little details. I mean, my limited interactions with him, you know, years ago were that he had no trouble whatsoever creating reams of information at the drop of a hat with very, very little, you know, instigation. You just had to sort of set him off slightly in the right direction and then he could do it. So I can only imagine what, you know, the Jekyll and Underworld key, you know, as long as it had just a couple little details, that would be more than enough to keep him going, I would suspect.
Oh, yeah. and I think that one aspect of this that comes out really strongly is that you've got to think a little bit ahead of time as to what aspect of the world do you want to emphasize. There's a way in which Underworld can be just labyrinthine. You don't really encounter much in the way of monsters because Labyrinth itself is deadly enough and also complex enough to make it its own thing. You know, you can make it a very structured place where you have all these different shrines and secret places that are in relation to one another. You can also have connections to other times, other planes, other parts of the world, and they're all going on there. You know, that's all happening there. And I think the reason why I caution against trying to map it all out is because trying to keep track of all of that is difficult. Yeah. So I would say this is kind of an interesting suggestion. And I know that one that came up in some of the earlier journals of Technical Affairs was the idea of, well, you know, let's randomly generate the underworld. That you could actually do that. You know, in some ways that might give you a somewhat easier seeming place than trying to plot it all out yourself. Mark Pettigrew did an article about that.
Yeah.
Which is actually, you know, I think useful. We'd like to get it back in print.
I like it a great deal, yes.
Yeah. But in even that simply reflects Mark's own ideas on how these things are set up. And the very first thing to do would be to look at it and say, this is interesting, and now how do I want to vary from it?
Right. Yes. Yeah. I was going to say before, I mean, it's just another aspect of Underworlds that I think is helpful, that I enjoy. Let's just say that I enjoy about Underworlds on Tecmo is that they really do hit home in a very powerful way, you know, how ancient Tecmo is and how much more is going on than is obvious on the surface. You know, these things, they go down very deep, and there's just, like, it really is a whole other world or multiple worlds beneath the world. I mean, little settings of their own, and there's a lot going on. You know, you look at the Five Empires and all the sort of, you know, conflicts that go on between them and so forth, and that's a big part of Tecmel, but that's only a really small slice of the setting. And a big slice is saying that the things that are going on is all this stuff that's happening in the underworld, this incredibly ancient history. And, you know, you get a sort of snapshot of that, a sort of, you know, a little taste of it when you go down into the underworld and just realize that, you know, people have lived on Tecmel for a really long time. And there's a lot of history that is not widely known and yet is still alive and setting things into motion. And you can encounter that in the underworld, where it still very much is going on.
That's a very important point, and that's something I think that not be stressed too highly. And that is, the underworld is its own place. It is its own context for what's going on. The things that go on in the underworld don't really have, how would I put this? They're the reasons for why things go on in the underworld often have very little to do with what's going on up on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a direction a campaign can take. Oh, you want to explore the underworld more. Well, by necessary consequence, what that means is that you were involving yourself in the realm of light and air less.
Yes, you know? Sure.
You know, and I think that that's part of any Tecmel campaign. It's one of the reasons why I think the world really brings things out and, you know, it has them come alive, is that there's all these options you can do. You want to go into an underworld and learn, glean the secrets of the ancient times. Okay, great, you can do that. But that's a different campaign than what a stride forth and fight Qadarni battles with you know, foreigners, you know, and
yes,
and troops. You know, and yes, the, both of those are different from, you know, let us go and become the retinue of a governor in part of the empire and strive politically for, you know, which way the Hrichan reed will fall. You know? And, you know, I mean, all of these things are different ways to focus a campaign, and the underworld is definitely one of them. I mean, I think it would be kind of interesting after a while if, you know, player characters who got so involved in what was going on in the underworld, you know, if that campaign progressed, if they would end up coming out of some session and finding out, didn't you hear? There's a new emperor. Didn't, you know, there were great battles. There was a civil war. And the player characters looking around, you know, sort of squinting their eyes in the midst of, you know, all the sunlight, saying, we were dealing with more important things.
Well,
what,
yes,
is this new emperor's name?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's another... I sort of feel that way about the underworld, much that I do about, you know, some of the other, you know, extraplanar goings on and the sort of, you know, schemes of the you know, the wizards to college and so forth and so on. And that, you know, a lot of the surface of what's happening on Tecmel, it's interesting and it's valuable and fun and all that sort of stuff, but it is really just sort of a, you know, a sideshow to some of the other things that are actually happening. You know, the you know, battles between great empires, it's got lots of it has importance, but it's not the only show. Like, there's a lot of other things going on Tecmel, and the underworld is where a lot of that is happening. So, you know, you can have a very, very rich and fun and you know, different kind of Tecmel campaign set in the underworld.
Mm-hmm. And you can also have a campaign that is sort of dare I say it, an Indiana Jones kind of campaign. I mean, that's suggested by the 10 keys to the
Louvre. Yes.
Like, okay, we found, you know, the first two keys. Now we must find the third. Where is that? Well, we dug up some, you know, and then thus the player characters end up being kind of these, adventurers who are, again, striving for something that most people don't know anything about and have no real knowledge of, and yet is very important to them, right? Yeah. You know, and it doesn't even have to be that. It can be you know, like Kior the Many Tongued or Suvidim the Sorcerer, you know, any of those wizards had various artifacts that by themselves would be fun and interesting and amazing to try and find. And trying to find them all, well, there you go. That's a campaign right there. You know, find even a few of them. That's a campaign right there. Yeah, you know. And so you see, Priest Tarsan, there is nothing that you cannot find, you can find that I cannot take away from you.
Well, I think we have covered the topic of underworlds in a pleasant and satisfactory manner.
Well, I hope so.
Goodness, an hour's gone by without us hardly even noticing.
Yeah, that happens.
Thank you for listening to the Hall of Blue Illumination. You can email us your questions, queries, and other topics at citizen@techmlpodcast.com. You can also find TechML Podcast on Twitter and Facebook. Until next time, take care and have fun playing Blue.